Cassette 2, Side 1. Chapter 8. All Play and No Work.
The 1st of June, and the King family is going on holiday tomorrow, said Meg. I'm free for 3 months. And Aunt March went away for her holiday today, said Jo. Isn't life wonderful? What will you do all your holiday? Asked Amy. I'll stay in bed late and do nothing, said Meg.
I have lots of books to read, said Jo.
Let's not do any studying, Beth, said Amy. Let's play all the time and rest, as Jo and Meg are going to do.
I will if Mother doesn't mind, said Beth.
Mrs. March agreed to the plan and said they could try it for a week. But, she added, I think by Saturday night you will find that all play and no work is as bad as all work and no play. Next day, Meg appeared at 10 o'clock and ate breakfast alone. It was a lonely meal, and the room was untidy because Beth had not cleaned it. Jo went to the river with Laurie, then sat in the apple tree and read a book. Beth began to tidy things in her cupboard, but she got tired and left it half done. She went to her piano, glad that she did not have to wash the cups and plates. Amy sat in the garden to draw, hoping someone would see her and say something nice about her picture. But no one appeared, so she went for a walk, got caught in the rain, and came home very wet. At tea, everyone said that it had been a delightful but unusually long day. Meg, who had been shopping in the afternoon, now decided that she did not like the dress she had bought. Jo had a headache from reading too long. Beth couldn't find anything in her cupboard, and the rain had made Amy's dress so wet that she couldn't wear it to Katie Brown's party the next day. Mrs. March listened, smiled, and said nothing. The week seemed to get longer and longer with nothing much to do, and by Friday the girls were glad that it was nearly over. Then Mrs. March gave Hannah a holiday, and when the girls got up on Saturday, there was no breakfast ready, no fire in the kitchen, and no mother waiting for them.
"What has happened?" said Jo.
Meg ran upstairs, then came down to say that Mother was staying in her room to have a rest. "She says we must look after ourselves today," Meg said.
"Good. I want something to do," said Jo.
Secretly, they were all pleased to have something useful to do again. Beth and Amy put cups and plates on the table while Jo and Meg got the breakfast. Then Meg took some tea and an egg up to Mrs. March. The tea was too strong, and the egg was burned. Mrs. March did not complain, but she laughed to herself afterwards. Jo decided to invite Laurie to dinner. "There's meat and vegetables and plenty of potatoes," she told Meg. "And we can have strawberries, and then coffee." Her mother said she did not mind at all because she was going out for dinner. Jo did her best, but the potatoes were still hard in the middle, the vegetables were cooked too long and fell to pieces, and the meat was burned black. The strawberries were not ready for eating, and she put salt on them instead of sugar. Unfortunately, this was not discovered until Laurie began eating them. He pretended everything was all right, but Amy took a spoonful and ran from the table. What's wrong? Said Joe. Meg and Lori told her.
Oh, no, said Joe.
Then she saw Lori start to smile, and she began to laugh. Soon, everyone was laughing with her.
What a terrible day, said Joe, after they had cleared everything away.
Mrs. March returned home later. Have you enjoyed your week of all play and no work, girls? Or do you want another week of it? She said.
I don't, said Joe.
Nor do I, shouted the others.
Mother, did you go out and leave us just to see how we would manage? Asked Meg.
Yes, said Mrs. March.
I wanted you to see that being comfortable depends on us all helping each other, and not just thinking of ourselves. Isn't it better to have time for play and time for work, and to make each day useful and enjoyable?
Oh, it is, Mother, it is, said the girls. Some days later, all four girls went on a picnic with Lori and his tutor, Mr. Brooke, and some other young people. Sally Gardner and her English friend, Miss Kate Vaughan, were among them. It was a sunny day, and they had their picnic on a hill under some trees. After the meal, most of the young ladies and gentlemen played games, but Miss Kate sat under a tree and began to draw. Meg watched while Mr. Brooke lay on the grass beside her, with a book, which he did not read.
I wish I could draw, said Meg.
Why don't you learn? Replied Miss Kate. She was little older than the other girls, and was very much the fashionable young lady.
I haven't time, said Meg. I have a job teaching four children in a family.
Oh, said Miss Kate, looking rather shocked. She said no more, but her face showed that she thought being a private teacher was little better than being a servant, and Meg's cheeks quickly became red.
In America, young ladies prefer to work and earn money for themselves, said Mr. Brooke quickly, and not expect others to pay for everything.
I see, said Miss Kate, coldly.
Soon after, she took her drawing and moved away.
There's no place like America for us workers, Miss Meg, said Mr. Brooke, smiling. His brown eyes looked at Meg warmly, and she smiled back at him.
I wish I liked teaching as much as you do, she said.
You would if you were teaching Lori, said Mr. Brooke. I'll be sorry when he goes to college next year, but then I shall become a soldier.
I think every young man wants to be a soldier, said Meg. But it's hard for the family who stay at home.
I have no family, and not many friends to care if I live or die, said Mr. Brooke, sadly.
Lori and his grandfather would care, said Meg, and we would all be very sorry if anything happened to you.
Thank you, said Mr. Brooke, cheering up immediately.
Chapter 9. Secrets. One October afternoon, Joe caught a bus into the town and stopped outside a building in one of the busy streets. She went in, looked up the stairs, and, after a minute, ran out again. She did this several times, to the great amusement of a young man who was watching from the opposite side of the road. But the fourth time, Joe gave herself a shake
and walked up the stairs. The young man crossed the road and waited. It was Laurie. 10 minutes later, Joe came running out, but did not look pleased to see him.
"What are you doing here?" she said.
"I'm waiting to walk home with you," he said.
"I've a secret to tell you, but first you must tell me yours."
"You won't say anything at home, will you?" said Joe.
"Not a word," promised Laurie.
"I've left 2 of my stories with a newspaper man," said Joe. "But I'll have to wait until next week before I know if they will be printed."
"Miss March, the famous American writer," said Laurie, throwing his hat into the air and catching it.
Joe looked pleased. "Now, what's your secret?"
"You remember Meg lost a glove at the picnic," said Laurie.
"Well, I know where it is."
"Is that all?" said Joe, looking disappointed.
"Wait until I tell you where it is," he said.
"Tell me then," said Joe.
Laurie whispered 3 words in Joe's ear. She stared at him, looking both surprised and displeased.
"How do you know?"
"I saw it."
"Where?" asked Joe.
"Pocket."
"What's wrong? Don't you like it?"
"Of course not. It's stupid. What would Meg say if she knew?"
"You mustn't tell anyone," said Laurie.
"I didn't promise," Joe reminded him.
"I thought you would be pleased," he said.
"Pleased at the idea of someone coming to take Meg away," said Joe.
"No, thank you."
She ran off down the hill, but Laurie came after her and reached the bottom first. She came up behind him, her face red and her hair blowing in the wind.
"That was fun," she said, forgetting her crossness in the enjoyment of a good run.
At that moment, someone passed by, then stopped and looked back. It was Meg.
"What are you doing here?" she said when she saw Joe. "Oh, you've been running, haven't you? Joe, when will you start to behave like a young lady?"
"Don't make me grow up yet, Meg," said Joe, looking sad. "It's hard enough having you change so suddenly." Meg was growing into a woman, and Laurie's secret made Joe realize that Meg would leave home one day, perhaps soon. 2 Saturdays after Joe had gone secretly into town, Meg saw Laurie chasing Joe all over the garden before the 2 of them fell on the grass, laughing and waving a newspaper.
"What can we do with that girl?" said Meg. "She never will behave like a young lady."
Minutes later, Joe came in with the newspaper. She sat down and began to read it.
"Are you reading anything interesting?"
asked Meg. "Only a story," said Joe.
"Read it aloud," said Amy. "It may amuse us."
Joe began to read very fast, and the girls listened. It was a love story about 2 people called Viola and Angelo, and most of the characters died in the end. But the girls enjoyed it, and Meg even cried a little at the sad parts.
"Who wrote it?"
asked Beth, watching Joe's face. Joe put down the newspaper.
"I did," she said, her eyes bright and shining.
"You?" said Meg, surprised. "It's very good," said Amy.
"I knew it," said Beth.
She ran across and put her arms around her sister.
"Oh, Joe, I am so proud."
And how proud Mrs. March was when she was told. Everyone began to speak at the same time.
"Tell us all about it.
How much did you get for it?
What will Father say?
Won't Lori laugh?
So Joe told them all about it, and that evening there was no happier or prouder family than the Marches.
Chapter 10. A Telegram. Mrs. March, the girls, and Laurie were sitting together on a dull November afternoon when Hannah hurried into the room with a telegram. Mrs. March read it, then dropped it to the floor, her face white and her hands shaking. Joe picked up the telegram and read it to the others in a frightened voice. Mrs. March, your husband is very ill. Come at once. S. Hale, Blank Hospital, Washington. The girls moved close to their mother. All their happiness had disappeared in a moment.
I shall go at once, said Mrs. March. But it may be too late. Oh, my children!
For several minutes there was only the sound of crying. Then Hannah hurried away to get things ready for the long journey.
"Where's Lori?"
Mrs. March asked.
"Here," said the boy. "Oh, let me do something."
"Send a telegram and say that I'll come at once," said Mrs. March. "The next train goes early in the morning. Now, I must write a note to Aunt March. Joe, give me that pen and paper."
Joe knew that the money for the journey must be borrowed from Aunt March, and she, too, wanted to do something, anything, to help her father. Lori went off to take the note to Aunt March and to send the telegram. Joe went to fetch some things from the shops, and Amy and Meg helped their mother to get ready.
"Father will need good food and wine to help him get better, and there won't be much at the hospital," said Mrs. March. "Beth, go and ask Mr. Lawrence for a couple of bottles of wine. I'm not too proud to beg for Father."
Mr. Lawrence came back with Beth. He offered to go with Mrs. March, but she wouldn't let the old gentleman make the long, tiring journey, although he could see that she would like to have somebody with her. He went away again, saying, "I'll be back." Soon after, Meg saw Mr. Brooke by the door.
"I'm very sorry to hear your news, Miss March," he said gently. "Mr. Lawrence and I think it will be a good idea if I travel with your mother."
"How kind you all are," said Meg. "It will be so good to know that there is someone to take care of Mother. Thank you very much."
She put out her hand and smiled gratefully up into his warm brown eyes. Lori came back with a letter and money from Aunt March, but Joe did not return. It was late afternoon when she came walking in and gave her mother some money. "That's to help make Father comfortable and to bring him home," she said.
$25, said Mrs. March. "My dear, where did you get it?"
Joe took off her hat.
"Your hair! Your beautiful hair!" cried Amy.
All Joe's lovely, thick, long hair was cut short.
"Joe, how could you?" cried Meg. "My dear girl, there was no need for this," said Mrs. March. "She doesn't look like my Joe, but I love her dearly for doing it," said Beth, and began to cry.
"Don't cry, Beth," said Joe. "I wanted to do something for Father, and selling my hair was the only thing I could think of doing. I'll soon have a curly head again, which will be short and easy to keep tidy."
But later, when Amy and Beth were asleep,
and Meg was lying awake, she heard Joe crying.
"Are you crying about Father, Joe?"
she asked.
"No, not now. It's my hair," cried Joe. "I'd do it again if I could, but I did love my hair, and the selfish bit of me is making me cry. Oh, don't tell anyone. I'll be all right in the morning."
During the days after their mother and Mr. Brooke went away, Meg and Joe went back to their jobs, and Beth and Amy helped Hannah to keep the house tidy. Everyone tried very hard to be good and hard-working and helpful. News of their father came through, at first telling them he was dangerously ill, but then saying he was slowly getting better. Chapter 11. Beth. 10 days after their mother went away, Beth came home late after one of several visits to a sick baby at the Hummels' house. She went straight to her mother's room and shut herself inside. Half an hour later, Joe found her sitting there, looking very ill.
"Beth, what's the matter?" cried Joe.
Beth put out a hand to keep her away.
"You've had scarlet fever, haven't you?" she said.
"Years ago, when Meg did," said Joe. "Why?"
"Oh, Joe, Mrs. Hummel's baby is dead," said Beth. "It died in my arms before Mrs. Hummel got home."
"My poor Beth, how awful for you," said Joe, putting an arm around her sister. "What did you do?"
"I just sat and held it until Mrs. Hummel came with the doctor. He looked at Heinrich and Minna, who were also feeling sick. 'It's scarlet fever,' he said. Then he told me to come home and take some medicine quickly, or I would catch it too."
"I'll fetch Hannah," said Joe.
"Don't let Amy come," said Beth. "She hasn't had it, and I don't want to give it to her."
It was decided that Amy must go to Aunt March's house, so Laurie took her there. Poor Amy did not like this plan at all, and only agreed to go when Laurie said he would visit her every day to bring her news of Beth. When Laurie got back, he asked Joe and Meg if he ought to send a telegram to Mrs. March. "Hannah says Mother can't leave Father and would only worry," said Meg. "She says Beth won't be sick long and that she knows what to do, but it doesn't seem right." Mr. Lawrence was not allowed to see Beth, and Meg felt unhappy writing letters to her mother saying nothing about Beth's illness. Joe nursed Beth night and day, but the time came when Beth did not know her and called for her mother. Joe was frightened, and Meg begged to be allowed to write the truth, but Hannah said there was no danger yet. Then a letter came saying that Mr. March was worse and could not think of coming home for a long time. How dark the days seemed. How sad and lonely. The sisters worked and waited as the shadow of death lay over the once happy home. It was then that Meg realized how rich she had been in the things which really mattered. Love, peace, good health. And Joe, watching her little sister, thought about how unselfish Beth always was,
living for others and trying to make home a happy place for all who came there. Amy, sad and lonely at Aunt March's house, just wanted to come home so that she could do something to help Beth. On the first day of December, the doctor came in the morning. He looked at Beth, then said quietly, "If Mrs. March can leave her husband, I think she should come home now." Jo threw on her coat and ran out into the snow to send a telegram. When she arrived back, Laurie came with a letter saying that Mr. March was getting better again. This was good news. But Joe's face was so unhappy that Laurie asked, "What is it? Is Beth worse?"
"I've sent for Mother," said Joe, beginning to cry. "Beth doesn't know us anymore."
Laurie held her hand and whispered, "I'm here, Joe. Hold on to me. Your mother will be here soon, and then everything will be all right."
"I'm glad Father is better," said Joe. "Now Mother won't feel so bad about coming home."
"You're very tired," said Laurie. "But I'll tell you something to cheer you up better than anything."
"What is it?" said Joe.
Laurie smiled. "I sent a telegram to your mother yesterday, and Mr. Brooke answered that she'd come at once. She'll be here tonight, and everything will be all right." Joe threw her arms around him.
"Oh, Laurie, oh, Mother, I am so glad."
She did not cry again, but held on to her friend. He was surprised, but he smoothed her hair and followed this with a kiss or two. Joe pushed him gently away.
"Oh, don't. I didn't mean..." "I enjoyed it," laughed Laurie, then went on.
"Grandfather and I thought your mother ought to know. She wouldn't forgive us if Beth... well, if anything happened. Her train will be in at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'll meet her." All that day, the snow fell, and the hours went slowly by. The doctor came, then said he would come back after midnight, when he expected there to be some change in Beth's condition, for better or worse. Hannah fell asleep in a chair beside Beth's bed. Mr. Lawrence waited downstairs, while Laurie lay on the floor, pretending to rest. The girls just waited, unable to sleep. At 12 o'clock, a change seemed to pass over Beth's face. Hannah slept on, but the girls saw the shadow which seemed to fall upon the little bed. An hour went by, and Laurie left quietly for the station. At 2 o'clock, Joe was standing at the window, watching the snow. She heard something, and turned to see Meg kneeling beside her mother's chair. A cold feeling of fear passed over Joe. "Beth is dead," she thought. She ran to the bed. The pain had gone from Beth's face, and now there was a look of peace instead. Joe kissed her and softly whispered, "Goodbye, Beth. Goodbye." Hannah woke up and looked at Beth.
"The fever's gone," she cried. "She's sleeping and breathing easily."
The doctor came soon after. "I think she'll be all right," he said. "Keep the house quiet and let her sleep." Meg and Joe held each other close, their hearts too full for words. Beth was lying as she used to, with her cheek on her hand and breathing quietly.
"I wish Mother would come now," whispered Joe.
And a moment later, they heard the sound of the door below, a cry from Hannah, then Lori's happy voice saying,
"Girls, she's come! She's come!"
Chapter 12. Love and Mr. Brooke. When Beth woke from her long sleep, she looked into her mother's face and smiled. Then she slept again, but Mrs. March held on to her daughter's thin little hand. Hannah made breakfast while Meg and Joe listened as their mother told them about their father's health and Mr. Brooke's promise to stay with him. Then Meg and Joe closed their tired eyes and were able to rest at last. Lori went to give the good news to Amy at Aunt March's house. He, too, was tired after the long night and just managed to finish telling his story before he fell asleep in the chair. Amy began to write a short letter to her mother, but before she could finish it, she saw Mrs. March coming towards her aunt's house. Amy ran to meet her. There were probably many happy little girls in the city that day, but Amy was the happiest of them all as she sat on her mother's knee.
"I've been thinking a lot about Beth," she said. "Everyone loves her because she isn't selfish. People wouldn't feel half so bad about me if I was sick, but I'd like to be loved and missed. I'm going to try and be like Beth as much as I can."
Her mother kissed her. "I'm sure you will succeed," she said. "Now, I must go back to Beth. Be patient, little daughter, and we'll soon have you home again." That evening, while Meg was writing to her father, Joe went upstairs to Beth's room and found her mother beside the bed as the little girl slept.
"I want to tell you something, Mother," said Joe.
"Is it about Meg?" said Mrs. March.
"How quickly you guessed," said Joe.
"Yes, it's about her. Last summer, Meg lost one of her gloves at the Lawrence's picnic, and later Lori told me that Mr. Brooke had it and kept it in his coat pocket. It fell out once, and Lori saw it. Mr. Brooke told Lori that he liked Meg, but was afraid to tell her because she was so young and he was so poor. Isn't it all awful?
Do you think Meg likes and cares about him?" asked Mrs. March, with a worried look.
"I don't know anything about love," said Joe.
"Do you think she's not interested in John?" said Mrs. March.
"Who?"
said Joe, staring.
"Mr. Brooke," said her mother.
"I call him John because we became good friends at the hospital."
"Oh, dear," said Joe. "He's been good to Father, and now you'll let Meg marry him if she wants to."
"My dear, don't be angry," said Mrs. March. "John told us quite honestly that he loved Meg, but said he would earn enough money for a comfortable home before he asked her to marry him. He wants very much to make her love him if he can. He's an excellent young man, but your father and I will not agree to Meg marrying before she is 20.
"I want her to marry Lori and be rich," said Joe.
I'm afraid Laurie isn't grown up enough for Meg, said Mrs. March. Don't make plans, Joe. Let time and their own hearts bring your friends together. Meg came in with a letter for her father. Beautifully written, my dear, said her mother, looking at the letter. Please add that I send my love to John.
Do you call him John? Said Meg, smiling.
Yes, he's been like a son to us, and we are very fond of him, said Mrs. March, watching her daughter closely.
I'm glad of that, because he's so lonely, was Meg's quiet answer. Good night, Mother dear.
Mrs. March kissed her gently. She does not love John yet, she thought. But she will soon learn to. End of Side 1.